Hey guys, this is James Oster, aka Jimmy O from Arrow in the Head, and I'm letting you know that my friends over at Rants from the Black Lodge podcast are reviewing Halloween 2018. As a massive fan of the original, I personally loved the new movie, despite a few odd choices involving an all-too-strange psychiatrist. Of course, this entire franchise works as one of those choose-your-own-adventure books. You got a number of films, you put them together, you can watch Druid Cults, or you can watch White Trash Michael Myers. There's something for everyone here. However, for me, it's the Jamie Lee Curtis as Laurie Strode facing off against the boogeyman that thrills. And for this viewer, David Gordon Green delivered. Now let's see what they have to say over at the Black Lodge. Thanks for tuning in, guys.
Recording live from the Black Lodge, it's me, the free will burning head turning ass kicking machismo dripping master podcast and mouthpiece of the Southeast, Brandon A. Lane, bringing you a new edition of the Rants from the Black Lodge podcast. A blood red moon fills the sky as long dark shadows creep on by. Ghosts, goblins, and skeletons too, moaning, groaning, and wailing just for you. Black cats prowl cemetery plots as witches boil babies in their kettle pots. Not an unopened grave to be found as the cemetery ghouls trot all around. A headless cross, what an evil sight, as you dance with the devil in the pale moonlight. Only once a year, this can be seen. Only once a year comes Halloween. Happy Halloween, everybody! Well, happy October 1st, actually, but if you're not celebrating Halloween starting in September, I think your horror fan status should be revoked. Speaking of horror fan status, I am a huge fan of the man you heard at the top of this episode from arrowinthehead.com, James Oster, a.k.a. Jimmy O. Now listen, I'm still a physical media guy, so I love my Fango, I love my Horror Hound, but hands down, my favorite horror news site is Arrow in the Head, and not to mention JoeBlow.com, which is Arrow in the Head's sister site, and they have great content, they got a great YouTube channel as well, so either way, you just can't go wrong. With that being said, I want you to hop over to Twitter, follow Jimmy O right now, at Jimmy to the O. Let me spell that out so there's no confusion. At JimmyToTheO. Thanks, James. That was an awesome intro. We can't thank you enough. Now, once you followed him, you got to return the favor to us. Find us on social media at Rants Black Lodge. Subscribe to the podcast on the many platforms we're available on, including iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, Podbean, Player FM, iHeartRadio. And don't forget to stop by our homepage at JuicyKruger.com. Here it is. We're a year after the release of 2018's Halloween, and I think it's only appropriate that we tackle the newest exploits of Michael Myers with a full-length commentary track, but that's not all. I was fortunate enough to sit down this month with an actress and stunt performer from that film by the name of Marion Singh to talk about her encounter with the Shape. So, if you're in store for a good trick-or-treat, stay tuned, but first we got some messages from our sponsors.
Dead.
Hello, I'm Chantel, the assistant manager of Brain Dead Network. Brain Dead Network is a film and podcast promotion company that is dedicated in bringing you the best content. We promote and market films for talented filmmakers, and we also work with podcasts to give them more of an audience. If you would like to know more about Brain Dead Network, please visit our website, braindeadnetwork.home.blog, and like us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Don't forget to check out our awesome podcasts, B-Movie Drive-In, Beyond the Crypt, Rants from the Black Lodge, and Hellhounds of Horror.
Come visit us if you dare.
Brain dead.
Behind every A-list slasher is a world-class stunt performer. In the case of the woman I'm speaking with tonight, October 31st has taken on a whole new meaning. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome into the Black Lodge Michael Myers' favorite victim, Marion Singh. Thank you so much, Marion, for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us here on the Rants from the Black Lodge podcast.
No problem. It's good to be with you and all of your followers and minions.
Oh, trust me, they're going to be very excited to have you on the podcast, as am I. So let's hit the ground running. For those who are in the loop, you're a stunt performer, and that's pretty cool. So I'm just curious to know, like, how do you come to the decision of entering into that line of work?
Well, I've been a martial artist for over 20 years, so it just kind of was a natural progression from doing... I'm also an actor, so I've been on stage since I was three, and I've done theater and some TV before I got involved in the stunts, but the stunts just seem to move a lot faster as far as progressing because of the relationships you make in the stunt community. It's all about the networking that you do and the people that you meet and things like that. And then you just have to get yourself into a place where you can meet those people, which is, you know, that's not easily done, but you keep on trying, and eventually you make some headway. So it was the martial arts stuff, and I wound up choreographing fights because of my martial arts background for the students that I had, and then some friends of mine and friends of friends who were in the independent film community said, "Oh, I know somebody that can do your stuff," and then I wound up doing stuff for them, and so then I got referred to Atlanta for film stuff. Because they said, you know, have you thought about applying on some of the casting pages down in Atlanta? It's blowing up right now. And I was like, no, I haven't really thought about it. So I went ahead and I looked on the page and it said they were looking for athletic men and women. And I was like, hey. So I went ahead and applied for that. And they called me back in the next 10 minutes. And it turned out to be Mockingjay 2 Hunger Games.
Oh, wow. A big, huge movie blockbuster.
Yeah, it was a blockbuster, but, you know, I was just a background extra person at that time, so it's you and 1,500 of your friends storming the castle, if you know what I mean. but I was behind, our group of 30 was behind the stunt team. We followed directly behind the stunt team. So I start talking to them, and they say, you know, yeah, you got to do this, and you got to do that, and that started my wheels turning, and I thought, you know, this might be a thing. So I got into... Insurgent, the sequel to Divergent after that, and had to go through a boot camp audition to get that role. And that was actually doing a special ability role, which meant we did everything the stunt people did, except we didn't get paid like the stunt people got paid because I wasn't union yet. I wasn't Screen Actors Guild. So that one tripped it over. I was like, okay, enough of this. They're making union wages. I'm making... not much at all, really. And so I decided to pursue my union card, and I got it. So that was 2014. I got it in October 2015, just through, you know, there aren't many union sets to work on to get your vouchers in order to become eligible to even join the union. So I had to fight my way through that, but, you know, it all evens out.
So October has a lot of meaning to you from that end, and for what we're here to talk about tonight, Halloween 2018. Now, as I stated before, on top of you being this kick-ass stunt woman, you're also an actor, and yes, you kind of pulled double duty in Halloween 2018. So let's talk about that. How did you get involved with, you know, this phenomenon?
Well, I mean, honestly, I wasn't sure what it was, because you have non-disclosure agreements, NDAs, and you don't, they don't really, you know, they ask if you're available. You say, of course I'm available. Are you kidding me? And then you go for a rehearsal. You have to drive to wherever. On this particular case, it was Charleston. I had to drive to Charleston and got a fitting. And even during the fitting, I mean, I'm dressing like a soccer mom. What? I don't even know what this is. So it could be anything. And then for the rehearsal, I walk into this old house in the middle of the Gaslight District in Charleston. It's like, okay, it wasn't even dressed. You couldn't even tell that it was for any, what kind of movie it was for, really. I mean, there was no indication of what it was. And I see this older gentleman in the room with me. And I'm like, okay, well, this is something. But we were sitting outside my house waiting to do this with me and Marion Green, the other, this stunt legend. I mean, I don't know if you know who Marion Green is, but she killed Mr. Orange in Reservoir Dogs.
Oh, okay, yeah. Awesome. Right. I worked with Tarantino. Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So she was Sandwich Lady. She was Mrs. Elrod 2.0.
Oh, okay, yeah.
She dies before I do with the hammer. So we're sitting there waiting, and then here comes the director, David Gordon Green, starts walking across the street toward us, and he's talking to a couple people, and the first thing he says is, "Oh my God, I'm so excited to meet you. You killed Mr. Orange in Reservoir Dogs." As soon as that happened, I was like, I'm amongst legends. Okay, I'm freaking out, but that's okay. But I still didn't know what it was for. I didn't know David Gordon Green was directing Halloween 2018. I had no idea. But the older gentleman, it was like, okay, you're going to die, and he's going to do it. I'm like, okay, that's fine. And he didn't have any makeup on. He didn't have a mask or anything, so I still had no clue. And we go over, you know, some choreography that didn't make it into the film, by the way.
Oh.
There was a whole other little section that we did, and Marion Green's part. There was some other stuff in that, too. But I don't think it'll see the light of day.
Oh, that's bullshit. No, we need to see it. We got to see it.
I know. And I can't talk about it. So, you know, if I told you, I'd have to kill you afterwards. Oh. No, I'm kidding. but that's what a non-disclosure agreement's all about. No. So we went over the choreography. And so, okay, your fitting, is it so-and-so? And I'm like, okay, that's cool. So, like, we go and have sushi. And then the next day I get an email from the wardrobe lady, and at the bottom line of the email, it says Halloween.
So, okay, just explain to me, like, how did you feel in that moment, knowing you were walking into a franchise that's 40 years old, you know, one of the most iconic killers in, or just beyond that, one of the most iconic personalities in film of all time, and you're going to be one of his victims.
Yeah, and I just, at that point, I started putting it together. It's like, oh my God, older guy coming up behind me with a knife. Let me put two and two together here. I think I can do it. And I mean, I did the happy dance. I seriously, I was a bed hopper. I was a freaking, you know, dresser jumper. I was a, you know, I was just running laps in my hotel room at that point. And I thought, this is going to be cool. But yeah, it was definitely a time to do the happy dance. That's for sure.
So were you a fan of the franchise prior to your involvement with it?
Well, it's so iconic. I mean, the Halloween franchise is among the big three, man. I mean, it's the big guys. You got Freddy, you got Jason, and you got Michael. So it's really cool to see that they're going to try to do it right and try to bring it back. And I know that it's been, now that it's this far out from the release, there are some controversies about not continuing a plot line. There is no sibling tie-in. There is no nothing like that. I get it. But in order for it to have life again and not have the shackles on it that it would have had, you kind of do have to go straight from when he got put into Miss Grove. I mean, if you think about it.
Well, I mean, so, a franchise that's been going for 40 years, that's a lot of continuity to draw from, and kind of trimming the fat and going back to the roots. I mean, I'll be honest, I was skeptical, but, you know, here we are, you know, a year from it, and I think for the most part, everybody seems to be in agreement that it's one of the best in the series. And to be a part of that, that's got to be cool.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I feel like, me? Really? Me? But it's also, you know, the people who are like, well, if you weren't going to include the rest of the sequels, then why give all the Easter eggs? Why give all the nods? Why give all the homages to all the other films? And I think it was a huge Easter egg. I think it was, we see you. we're acknowledging the fans, but we got to do this a different way. And I think that's the approach they had to take with it in order to have the vision that they were. I mean, Nick Castle had his cameos in it, but James Jude Courtney is the new Michael Myers, and he kicked butt on that. He did a great job.
Oh, yeah, he was tremendous.
Yeah, his stunt double, Cody Robinson, was amazing. And, you know, I mean, come on, you gotta give the franchise credit for continuing in a really good way and keeping his ruthlessness, not giving him a motive, back to when he was the storm on the horizon, when he was the theater of the mind, as Dave McCray likes to say. I mean, to bring it back to no motive, Michael Myers, that's what keeps you up at night.
I saw the movie opening night, and there were a lot of terrified people in that audience. And you know it's a good movie when you're exiting the theater and people are just kind of looking over their shoulders to see what's lurking in the darkness. So
don't go see it at night.
Yeah, no. One of the cool things about stunt performers in especially the horror genre is that there is sort of a potential to cross over and become, you know, more involved, whether it be a victim or, you know, a killer. People like, you know, Kane Hodder is a perfect example, you know, a stunt guy who became the face of a franchise and, you know, and beyond. If they came to you and they said, we've got to have Marion Singh for the reboot of Sleepaway Camp, or, you know, another female-led slasher movie. Are you game for that?
Oh, heck yeah. Sign me up. Oh, my gosh. Horror fans are the best fans, and they're the best family that I've ever come across. I mean, it's really interesting to see the horror conventions, everybody coming together. It's because it's a different genre to get behind, really, if you think about it. I mean, it's been so long since the original Freddy movies came out, and everybody's still just clamoring for Freddy stuff. Like, Monster Mania just finished this past weekend, and, you know, everybody was there for, you know, getting to see all the iconic past horror genre villains. You know, it never goes away. It never goes away, and I don't think it ever will.
Well, you brought up a good point about conventions, and I mean, now that you've kind of risen to this status of, you know, being killed in a horror movie by an iconic killer, I'm sure that you have been invited to do quite a few conventions. Just a rough estimate over this past year, how many conventions do you think you've done?
Well, that's the thing. I keep waiting for them to invite me to these conventions. I'm doing CreepyCon this weekend, actually, in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Right down the road from where I live.
Oh, my gosh. That is so amazing. I'm going to be there Friday and Saturday. So I'm just going to see what Halloween fans are in Knoxville, Tennessee, and say, hey. But I'll have a booth there. They gave me a booth. And, you know, I got to just kind of get into it where I can. And I was hoping I could be in Monster Mania, but I think they plan the guests like a year out. I think it's really far out to plan.
I know some people who work for Fanboy Expo, yet again, out of Knoxville, and they have people like knocking down their door trying to get positions there, but they book people so far out that when they, you know, occasionally they'll have like spots open and they'll be able to slide somebody in. But trust me, you're on the horizon. They're going to be calling for you, and I look forward to potentially getting to meet you here in the very near future. Let's have everybody give them your social media so they can follow you, and they can find out where you're going to be and what you're up to next.
Sure. Everything is Marion Singh. Imagine that. It's always available. Facebook, Marion Singh. Instagram, Marion Singh. YouTube channel, Marion Singh. You know, I'm, you know, always Marion Singh. That's me. Instagram, Marion Singh. So, you know, IMDb, Marion Singh.
One final thing before we go. Being that you're a stunt performer and an actress, and in particular a woman, the stunt field is sort of incorrectly thought of as like a man's world. If you had a message to give to, you know, a little girl who for whatever reason, wants to jump out of windows and be caught on fire and all those good things, what would your advice to them be?
I think gymnastics is a great background to have. Tumbling is always good. Martial arts is good. Any kind of athleticism is great. You know, swimming and horseback riding, learn to ride a motorcycle, learn to drive a stick, learn how to drive a manual transmission. But the thing is, it is mostly a man's world because nobody likes to watch a woman get hurt and nobody likes to watch a woman die. So unless we are stunt doubles for female actresses, the work is few and far between for female stunt people. So I would say that if you learn as many of the skills that you want to learn and focus on those and become really good at what you do, then you'll be able to find your niche. You find your niche in what you do, whether it be, you know, some people just do horses. Some people just do car. Some people just do fighting. I do fighting, tactical and military, wire work, and creature movement. So, you know, it, for the motion capture stuff, you can be a little beastie and you can move around and you can do whatever. So just, you know, don't ever quit. If you have a dream, chase it. And try to fill in as many of the puzzle pieces as you can along the way so that by the time all of them fall in place, somebody sees you doing what you do and they want you to participate in their vision.
Well, I think those are great words to live by, not only for the little girls out there, but for the little boys as well. You're an inspiration and we love you so much. Thank you for taking time out of your our little nothing podcast, and we're greatly indebted to you. So thank you very much. And I guess, happy Halloween.
Next Generation Wrestling brings some of the most talked about and star-studded professional wrestlers from around the world. Based out of East Tennessee, NGW is becoming one of the most sought-after independent wrestling promotions in the past 4 years. Witness NGW Live or on demand on the High Spots Wrestling Network streaming app. Follow us on social media platforms at NextGenTN.
Hey assholes, it's me, Boner the Skeleton, mascot of the Rants for the Black Lodge podcast, here to sell you some shit you probably can't afford. Are you low on cash? That's not a problem. Sell your children. Sell your blood. Go to the jack-off clinic and give them a sperm sample. We don't care how you get the money, as long as you give it to us. Want a t-shirt? Want a sticker or a mug to show that you're a true friend and a member of the Rant Army? Well, guess what? Go to Rant Army Surplus. The link is in the description. And if you don't buy something, then fuck you.
You ready?
Shit.
Happy Halloween, 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 happy Halloween, Silver Shamrock. It's kind of in this movie, a little bit.
Yeah, at least the masks are.
We'll get to that in a long form. Everybody, back with another full-length feature commentary, but I couldn't be doing it on my own, sitting to my left. I mean, you can smell him from a mile away. Stank Dick, Stank Dick, Stank Dick. Stank Dick Eddie.
Hey, guys. Excited to be back.
Well, I'm glad to have you back. Why are you taking your
shirt
off?
It's hot in the Black Lodge right now.
Oh, it's always hot in the Black Lodge. We're really close to the devil's anus over here in the south. Unfortunately, it can't run the air. It has a lot of unfortunate side effects in the way of noise that we don't want in the background. We only want you to hear our beautiful, beautiful tones of our voice.
Silky smooth.
So smooth, you could drag your balls across it all day and not get one lick of friction. Chit-pow!
God damn right.
All right, you know the drill by now, and if you don't, I'll give you a little refresher course. What you're going to do, if you would like to watch the movie along with us, you're going to cue your DVD, Blu-ray, or however you got
digital.
Digital. I'm sure there's a digital form out there one way or another. You're going to bring it up literally to the first thing you're going to see is the Universal logo is going to start barreling towards the screen. But you don't have to watch the movie with us. You get to watch the movie with us. So if you just want to listen to us ramble off a bunch of nonsense and good old-fashioned facts and quips and queries about this newly found classic, dare I say? Well, then just listen along. So I'm going to give us a little countdown. When I say hit play, hit play. On the count of 3, 2, 1, play. Yeah, there's a little bit of lag. There we go. All right. So Halloween 2018, which I feel like this is a shit title right off the bat. Do you think this movie should have been called Halloween Returns or... I mean, it definitely shouldn't have been called Halloween 2, because we already have...
I think that's probably why they were like, what do we fucking call this?
Yeah, but why do you want to call it Halloween? Because it's super confusing now, because we've got three movies in the series with that title. It's just kind of a unfortunate thing, especially for kids, because they're confusing. Not... It's going to be confusing as all get out. It was released October 19th of 2018, thus the title, Halloween 2018. You and I saw it in the theater together. Has your opinion of this movie changed from that point till now?
I think a little bit. I think I was so hyped that I got to see another Halloween movie in theaters. I thought it was really good in theaters. I still think it's pretty good. I mean, I know there's a lot of backlash with it online. But
we'll definitely get absolutely. To the things that are that we both find negative about it. But I still, for the most part, feel... pretty much the same way. Maybe my rankings are, you know, slightly different, but I'd still put it towards the heap of the Halloween franchise. It had an estimated budget of $10 million for low budget horror movie. That's a lot of money, but let's just put it into perspective. I want to say that Jason X had a higher budget. And is way worse. I might be completely wrong on that, but that's beside the point. In terms of budget for a movie, especially consider how much money it made, it's still nothing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we talked about it too when we did the Halloween 4 podcast about how A Quiet Place was made for like, I think, $5 or $6 million.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of cool that some of these films can... have such a small budget and generate so much buzz. It's pretty cool.
Well, I mean, I don't know how you can put these things together for any amount of money, considering there's so much amount of work that goes into this. And I guess there's an idea that you could just kind of point a camera at something and have a product. And, I mean, I guess, you know, the Blair Witch Project is proof of that. That's not a slam on that movie, by the way. But there's a lot of care... that goes into these films, and I guess we kind of take for granted sometimes of how much that could be. Needless to say, $10 million, still a pretty low budget. However, the domestic gross, the money it just made here in America, $159,342,015. a bit, but it gets better. The worldwide gross, $255,485,178. That's incredible.
I remember when we first found out how much it did opening weekend. Was it like $70 million or
something like that? Yeah, it was the highest grossing or the biggest opening in October ever, I believe.
And I remember I told you, I'm like, oh great, we're gonna get some sequels that fucking suck, because that's how usually the order this goes in.
We'll get into the potential sequels that are coming out of this a little later, but I think we're in as good a hands with the franchise that we probably, you know, have been, at least in recent memory.
It's a far step above Resurrection.
I don't know that the series could get that low again. Please don't make me a fool by saying that. this movie has a Rotten Tomatoes score of 79%. That's obviously certified fresh. The audience score, 70%. So it's kind of around the same. Some of the controversies, in particular about the gentleman we're seeing right here with very dashing mustache, that will... We have a really, really good question from Jimmy Oster,
a.k.a. Jimmy O from Arrow in the Head. He's given us a question we're going to be answering later on in the Q&A section, specifically about him. But needless to say, the point I'm trying to make is that there's a little bit of controversy, but I think everybody, for the most part, is kind of on board for, you know, what they did here. IMDb, 6.6 out of 10. That's actually kind of low. I thought this would be at least a 7.
Yeah.
Metacritic, 67%. Google users, which I always find to be the most accurate for my taste, 88%. I say that's
it's all right.
pretty good one. On Fat Tony's hit list, we have 18 kills. So this is one of the more blood-soaked entries of the film, even though there's, and I guess in slasher terms, you know, it's pretty par for the course, but Halloween is not really known for its, you know...
Less score.
Yeah, less kills. Yeah, I mean, there's, what, 5 kills in the original Halloween?
That sounds right.
Something maybe 6 with Judith.
It's around there.
This is a way, way bigger body count, but actually, there's not any kills until, a half an hour into the movie. So really, I mean, the statistic I'm about to give you about the averages is even quicker if you take into account. Michael only kills 17 people. Now, there are 18 kills in the movie, but unfortunately, our doctor here has a heel turn and kills Officer Hawkins.
It's a wrestling turn. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. They love it when we talk wrestling on the podcast.
No, they don't.
No, you're right, they don't. It averages a kill every 5.89 minutes, but like I said, there's actually no kills until like a half an hour into the movie. So if you want to do the math, it's, you know, for that hour of time, that's 18 kills. That's pretty blood soaked. What do you think about this opening? I kind of like the that it's daylight and it just kind of, we're about to see this nice hard cut of him trying to get him to talk.
I think it sets the mood. I liked it too, because this is one of the big things they showed in the first trailer, so I felt like it didn't give too much away, like how we always talk about in certain trailers that they give way too much away of movies.
Yeah, there's the new Pet Sematary trailer.
Yes. So like this, it didn't, to me, I feel like it didn't give too much away, but it kind of got you hyped for it. And it was a little weird for me to see Michael with his mask off, but
I actually kind of dig it.
I like it. It's just different.
It's handled a lot better than, say, like Rob Zombie's Halloween 2, where you just have a hulking hobo, you know, for most of the movie. Oh god, which is the complete opposite of this movie, which is the whole center of it is like, please fucking talk, just say something. I'm going to give the award for best kill in this movie to Dr. Sartain having his fucking head stomped in. I've just got chills talking about it.
He legit did.
it's a cool scene. There's a lot of really good kills in this movie. A lot of them happen off screen, which I was really appreciative of the restraint this movie had.
My favorite kill actually has something to do with somebody who's actually involved with this podcast.
Oh, you're talking about Miss Marion. Yes. Who gets a knife right through her fucking throat.
Because, like, you don't see it coming. Like, yeah. You do, but you don't. Like, you don't. Yeah. It's pretty gruesome.
Oh, that whole scene is just fucking great, because you have that long tracking shot, and, you know, he gets the hammer, and he kills the woman. I guess he's kind of like the substitute for Mrs. Elrod. Yeah. And then he gets the knife, and comes up...
The baby.
Oh, my God. we were both white-knuckling, like, oh, my God, he's going to kill that baby. But he didn't. Kills a kid, though, later on, which I really appreciate that. One of the other things that we're, your drink is getting,
What is going on here?
I had the door open earlier, it's hot as fuck, by the way, and, his drink is getting attacked by gnats.
It's fine.
Yeah, deal with it. You drank worse.
That's true. That's actually true.
Okay, on Stank Dick Eddie's Titty Tally, what do we got?
Ironically, I believe we only got one set of titties, and it's actually a flashback tit.
Yeah, to Judith.
They look nice.
Oh, no, that... I'm blanking on her name.
I can't think of her name either.
She was totally banging hot back then. Granted, it's 40 years later, and I mean, I would do her just out of respect.
Yeah. I will say, if you kind of think about nudity in this movie, it would be kind of weird, just because I feel like there's no real opportune spots except for a deleted scene.
I completely disagree. I think our podcasters right here should be taking a fuck break on the side of the road before they meet Lori.
He's fucking rock hard. He's like, oh god, we're about to meet Lori Strode. Let's fuck. Okay. I got this money.
So here we are 40 years after the original Halloween, and to say that Michael Myers is an institution of, you know, horror would be an understatement. And in many ways, he's on the Mount Rushmore of slasher characters, you know, with Freddy and Jason, and I know that fourth spot's kind of arguable, but Leatherface. It's Leatherface. He's been in a lot of shitty movies, but he's still the best.
No, man. According to Scott, it's Chucky.
Well, Scott, Flatfoot Scott is full of shit. But let's take a trip back to 1978. You've got John Carpenter and Deborah Hill, and they just, you know, Carpenter's like fresh out of, you know, school. He's wanting to make, you know, some movies and stuff, and I think he had done the Elvis movie, like the TV movie at this point.
He did Assault in Precinct 13.
But I mean, like, low budget stuff, yeah. And horror is always a surefire thing. Like, you can crank them out for next to no money. I mean, this movie's a perfect example of that, but the original Halloween was made for, like, under $1 million.
Was it $300,000?
Yeah, something. Yeah. I mean, you would know better than me, being the Halloween expert between the two of us. But the point is that, I mean, they took a really simple premise, and the box office numbers are still, like, they don't know how much money exactly that Halloween made. I think up until, that stupid Greek wedding movie, Big Fat Ugly Greek Wedding or whatever it's called, until that movie come out, Halloween was the highest grossing independent film ever made. And in some ways, it probably still is, because they don't have the actual amount of the money that the movie made. I mean, it didn't show wide. It was shown a little bit in this part of the country, and then it would move to another part of the country. And over time, it kind of gained this cult status where people would show it at, you know, midnight and, you know, on the weekends. The kids just, you know, they went fucking nuts for it. And it birthed this whole slasher craze. I mean, it wasn't the first slasher film. I mean, you could go back.
Black Christmas would have been.
Or I would say that even really before that, I mean, you've got Psycho and, what's the other one from around the same time? Peeping Tom.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you've got Black Christmas and Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And anyways, Halloween's the first one that kind of breaks through to the mainstream. Like, this is the biggest thing going at the time. There were no point, I mean, I guess no idea of doing a sequel, but Friday the 13th came out, and Prom Night, and the Burning and everything, it got this whole slasher thing really, really chugging, so Halloween 2 comes out. Well, what do you do with Halloween 2? You throw in an Empire Strikes Back twist with it, and suddenly you have a sibling connection between Lori and Michael. They're both, you know, off to the races, but they end that movie conclusively. And, well, now they're in a point where, like, shit. We have a successful series, but we killed off our main character. What do? Well, they release the critically underrated and much maligned Halloween 3, which was the first episode that you and I did on this podcast. Absolutely. Together. We love you, Tom Atkins. I think it's a masterpiece, but I understand why people do not like it.
Yeah, I think, too, right after when Halloween 2 came out, it was actually the first film that was kind of pushed out by Universal. So I'm wondering if they had a certain picture deal because of that, and that's kind of how Halloween 3 came out with that.
You're probably on the money on that. They probably contractually were obligated to owe them a movie, but it's just, at the same time, it's still kind of weird. Then why would you kill Michael?
Yeah, like, you think somebody in the studio would be like, no, you guys aren't fucking doing this.
It seems like it was a little more open-ended on a creative decisions back then. They weren't as protective, I guess, as they are, and the production companies aren't as involved then as they are now.
Yeah.
Anyways, we have sort of like the end of that first wave of slasher movies with, you know, when they're starting to become a little more self-aware, Slumber Party Massacre, stuff like that. But then we have a new slasher icon that reinvigorates it for the second half of the decade, and that being Freddy Krueger. So we've got Freddy Krueger and Jason and you know, these new slashers are kind of running wild. Halloween 4 happens, the 10th anniversary of the original. We both agree Halloween 4 is a really good movie. And then they rush into Halloween 5, and it was rushed, and it has some unresolved plot points, which Daniel Farren's tried to fix.
Tie it all up, yeah, in part 6.
And Halloween 6, for all intents and purposes, is the end of the original series. So then we have, at the behest of Jamie Lee Curtis, to do Halloween H2O with Steve Miner, who directed Friday the 13th Part 2 and Part 3. I certainly don't like Halloween H2O as much as I did when it came out. I will say the ending is terrific, but overall, I think it's leaves a little bit to be desired. But I will say this, it is heads and tails better than the movie that followed it, and it ends the sister
storyline
of Laurie Strode and Michael Myers.
The amount of people in Halloween Resurrection, like, it's just so bad.
Buster Rhymes karate kicked the fucking series into the grave, which led to
the reboot.
Reimagining. I mean, I'll give Rob Zombie a little bit of credit in that he, from his perspective, it was going to get remade regardless. It might as well be remade by me, who's going to do something different with it than somebody else. And love it or hate it, I can appreciate it on the merits of paying homage at the same time doing something different. However, it was followed by another movie that is...
There's a trend here, guys. Whoa. Do you see this trend, why I'm worried right now for next year?
Knock on wood, I think we are in better hands. Rob Zombie's Halloween 2 was plagued with so many production problems. They filmed a good deal of the movie. They were transporting the film through customs, or not through customs, through an airport, and they x-rayed their fucking film and ruined it, so they had to rush and refilm a lot of stuff. So that movie is just, it has a weird, inconsistent tone. I am convinced to this day that Rob Zombie had just rewatched Twin Peaks, and that's why that whole horse thing is in there. So I can't even entirely hate the movie. If it weren't called Halloween, I might be able to reappraise it as something, but it's just not what anybody wanted.
Yeah, the whole movie, he doesn't even have his mask on. He kills the people in the field, and he puts his mask on, and then like takes it off. Like, it kills to me. Like, it kills the whole thing. Now his Michael Myers is great. Like, I think like his towering build and everything, I like that.
I don't, and I'm going to praise the casting of James Jude Courtney when we get to him a little later in the podcast, because to me, he's the right build for Michael. He's kind of like the T-1000 in Terminator 2. Physically, he's a little less unassuming, but he's not a small guy.
Yeah, he's stout.
No, and it's not a knock on Tyler Mane, who, WCW alum Tyler Mane.
You guys love that.
He was also Bane in the awful Joel Schumacher Batman and Robin movie.
God, that movie's terrible.
No, he wasn't. That was Jeep Swenson, also from WCW. See, I'm confusing...
Doomsday Cage.
I'm confusing all of my wrestling references. So, I mean, like, 40 years, we've got Michael Myers in so many different aspects. You know, comic books, and he's in Dead by Daylight, the new video game, t-shirts, action figures. NECA just got the license.
About fucking time.
Yeah, it's, I mean, NECA makes good stuff. I just got my Roy Friday the 13th figure today. So, the point I'm trying to make is that, you know, through the 40 years, we have these kind of ideas and these framework of for what a Friday the 13th. I got Roy on the brain. A Halloween movie consists of. You might even call them tropes. Bum bum bum. Trump on it. All right. So we're gonna go down. I have a list of 15 tropes, and we're going to see what of these things, this movie does and does not accomplish. So number one, synthesizer score. That's a big yes.
Great score.
There's a piece of music in this that John Carpenter composed where Allison is being chased by the shape. Ugh, cream of jeans is so good. accidental kill, i.e. Ben Tramer in Halloween 2 or Ted Hollister getting killed. Not in this movie. There is a scene that makes you think that's going to happen, but it doesn't come to fruition. Michael prematurely thought to be dead. Yes. Michael stalks victim in broad daylight. Yes. Jump scare. Yes. Michael plays a prank on a victim. Yep.
The ghost.
Yeah. Put the sheet on the Vicky. Is that her name?
Yep.
Oh yeah, sweet Vicky. Baby.
That goes back to titties we should have seen in this movie.
I can't disagree with you there. Someone refers to Michael as the boogeyman. Now I rewatched this movie today. And we just passed the scene where it happens, and I kept having to rewind it because you and I and some other guys from the podcast are in a chat chat group together on Messenger, and we're sending audio messages with one another back and forth, and I kept getting fucking messages when I'm trying to hear whether or not someone says boogeyman, so I had to rewatch the scene where the podcasters are interviewing Lori about four times. But he does refer to Michael as the boogeyman. Michael survives the finale of the film. I'm going to give it to this movie because obviously we are getting sequels, and post-credits you hear him breathing, which was supplied by Nick Castle. So there's another little connection with him and the character. Canon discontinuity. Yup. did I say Smith's Grove is visited or referenced to start at the beginning of the film? Events take place on Halloween. Yep. Animal is found dead or murdered. Nope, not in this movie. I was convinced it happened in this movie, but
deleted scenes.
Okay, doesn't count. events of a previous film are mentioned. Yeah, quite a few. Judith's tombstone is removed from the cemetery. Now, Michael does show up in there, but unless there is reference to that I missed of them, someone saying he removed it, it's still there. So that's 12 out of 15. So this is pretty much the ultimate Halloween film, right? I think we're both in agreement with that.
And I think, too, this movie is made for the fans. Oh, we just saw his eye. It's badass.
That's a perfect thing right there. You're just saying for the fans. There are little details in this movie that harken back to the first movie. The little pinhole in the mask where Laurie stabs him with the sewing needle. His eye being fucked up from where she
coat hanger.
The infamous scene in there. So let's talk about this movie. We've yammered on a little bit about previous movies, but let's read the synopsis there, Stank Dick Eddie.
It's been 40 years since Laurie Strode survived a vicious attack from crazed killer Michael Myers on Halloween night. Locked up in an institution, not a sanitarium, Myers manages to escape when his bus transfer goes horribly wrong. Laurie now faces a terrifying showdown when the masked madman returns to Haddonfield. But this time, she's ready.
Oh, yes. She's very ready. How do you feel about Jamie Lee Curtis's take on the Laurie character from this movie as opposed to H2O? I mean, they're parallels, but the approach is different.
To me, the whole approach of this is that she's like kind of has PTSD. Like she has, but I think it's very relatable because you got to think, back then, there wasn't a whole lot of talk of stuff like this, like people having PTSD.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of on the forefront with things like, whole gun control. Like you see it go back and forth in the movie about gun control. Like, I don't need a gun to protect my family. It's just very topical with all the shit going on now. So I like the way they take it because she feels like she wants to be ready for him no matter what.
I feel like, I mean, don't get me wrong. I think Jamie Lee Curtis is good in anything that she's in. But I find her performance in this movie more moving than her performance in H2O. There are points in H2O that, like, I feel a connection more to her because I see glimpses of the Lori from the first movie, but this is almost a different character.
She's a shell of herself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are moments where, like, this scene right here when she shows up, she has, you know, like, oh, I'm late, and then she just, yeah, drinks the wine and then completely breaks down. It's that shift that, I don't know, just makes the character more interesting to me than what she was doing in H2O. And I know you H2O fans are probably going to come at me, but...
I'm an H2O fan, but I agree. But I told you the reason why. It's because it was the first one I saw in theaters, so it holds a special place in my heart. But I think the way she plays Lori this go-around is a lot...
And there she is.
Character development-wise makes more sense in this than it does in H2O.
I think they take a little more time to kind of... I don't know. To get used to her in this movie. I think you're kind of like thrown into the whole, oh, I'm Carrie Tate, you know, and I have nightmares and stuff. I don't know. H2O is just not handled as well, in my humble opinion. So let's talk about Jamie Lee Curtis, the infamous Scream Queen. Scream Queen of all Scream Queens. Her career started back, you know, well before this. She had a reoccurring role as Barbara Duren on a show called Operation Petticoat. But let's just be honest, Halloween is what put her on the map, and she worked with John Carpenter a few times. She provides the voice of the curfew person in Halloween 3. She's in The Fog with Tom Atkins. And
God damn right.
The only thing that's wrong with that movie is he doesn't have a fucking mustache. How do you make a Tom Atkins movie with no mustache? Creepshow has that problem as well. Fuck him. Terror Train, which is another really good slasher movie, kind of like a whodunit a la Friday the 13th, but you get a lot of the characters changing costumes the whole time. It's a cool movie. Oh my god, it's got that that magician in it that was really popular. Oh my god, he's like the biggest magician on the fucking planet. And not like a douche, not like new douche. Fuck, David Copperfield.
That's what I was thinking. I didn't know that was it.
Yeah, it was an early appearance for him. I affectionately know her as Ophelia, the prostitute in Trading Places, with Dan Aykroyd, who is in Ghostbusters. You just got busted.
What else do we get to see in Trading Places?
Those massive mammaries.
Goddamn right we do.
Now, it doesn't make a lot of sense that we would have seen them in Halloween, but I have to say, in Prom Night, they fucking tease the shit out of you to make you think they're going to show those titties, and they fucking don't. You get to see it in her bra, though, and, oh yeah.
It always throws me off, though, when she takes the wig off in Trading Places. I'm like, oh, fuck. And then, like, she pretty much kept short hair, like, pretty much.
Yeah, what do you think about her hair in this movie? I mean, it's a little more evocative of the, you know, how her hair was in the first movie, but I kind of like short hair Jamie Lee Curtis.
Well, you already know my opinions on this beautiful silver
fox. Yeah, I can see your erection.
It's the pleats and the pants. No, I like it. I think it goes with her character better than the short hair.
She was in A Fish Called Wanda. She was Wanda in A Fish Called Wanda. It's a great movie. Blue Steel, underrated. She was in My Girl with Dan Aykroyd, who's in Ghostbusters. She just got busted again!
It's funny, because like the whole story of My Girl is completely opposite of Trading Places, so the idea is hilarious. Yeah.
You're gonna see a trend of Jamie Lee and Dan Aykroyd working together. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. She was Hannah Miller in 56 episodes of Anything But Love. I want to say that, oh my god, Richard, what is his name? God. You'd know him if you saw him. I'm blanking. True Lies with Arnold Schwarzenegger, who was in Kindergarten Cop, which was directed by Ivan Reitman, who directed Ghostbusters. You just got busted three times. And most recently, she's been in 23 episodes of Scream Queens.
My wife liked it. It's interesting. It's funny. A lot of funny stuff.
Not my cup of tea, but, you know.
As a short-haired Jamie Lee Curtis, I'm going to watch it.
Okay, well, I mean, what you do with your pants off, that's it's between you and your hand, I guess. But, I mean, she's best known for her role as Laurie Strode, which she has appeared several times now in Halloween, Halloween 2, Halloween H2O, Halloween Resurrection, and not to mention she's signed on for the two sequels, Halloween Kills and Halloween Ends, after this movie. Let's talk about a little bit of trivia for Jamie Lee Curtis. She is the daughter of Psycho star Janet Leigh. They appeared together in a couple H2O. Of films, H2O and The Fog. They're both in The Fog, but they don't share any scenes. That's kind of a missed opportunity there with Carpenter. And her father was Tony Curtis. She's been married to Christopher Guest, best known for his role as Nigel Tufnell.
Stonehenge!
And this is Spinal Tap, which is my top 10 favorite films of all time. She retired from acting in 2004 after doing the movie Christmas with the Cranks, which obviously didn't stick, thankfully. She's in Dan Aykroyd's in that movie, right. So I'm going to throw that one in there because Christmas and the Cranks is...
I actually just watched that this past Christmas because of my wife.
I'm so sorry.
She looks terrible. That's like the one movie she doesn't look good in. It's weird.
Yeah, you should tweet her that. I'm sure she'd really appreciate it.
I bet. I love you.
Look better in your movies with Tim Allen. No. She is the godmother of Jake Gyllenhaal.
I've heard that.
Yeah.
I've heard that.
In fact, evidently it was Jake who kind of got her... interested in reprising the role of Laurie.
Thank you, Jake.
So thank you, thank you, Mysterio.
You're good in almost every movie you're in. I appreciate you. We've had that talk.
She claims that Dan Aykroyd is the best on-screen kisser she's worked with. Goddamn right, Dan Aykroyd.
It's because he believes in aliens.
he learned how to smooch from a
extraterrestrial. Yeah, it's no big deal.
She was awarded a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame in 1998. Well, well deserved. Her legs are insured for $2 million.
That's fucking random.
Well, a lot of stars do that. Like Jennifer Lopez, her ass is insured. That's because, like, that's... At least, especially, like, in the 90s, that's how she got her roles. You know, those gams, man. If by some accident she weren't able to have them... kill that kid.
He just wanted to dance, man. He didn't want to go hunting with his dad. He just wanted to dance.
In the theater when this happened, both you and I looked at each other like, "What the fuck? You just killed a kid!"
Yeah, because you were next to me, and then my wife was on the other side.
And then our good friend Cameron was on the end, and man, he was fucking white knuckling the whole time because he's not really a horror movie guy. So he had a good scare by seeing a kid get torn to pieces. She's a much awarded performances throughout, you know, her career. Won the best performance by an actress in a motion picture for a Golden Globe in 1995 for True Lies.
Great movie.
Deserved. Saw it in the theater a bunch of times back before you could have porn easily accessible.
You're just jerking it in the theater.
I just found out something about True Lies. True Lies has not been released on Blu-ray. How the fuck is it not on Blu-ray? James Cameron is the reason.
Don't be a dick, man.
Yeah, fuck you, James Cameron. Nobody wants to see that Avatar shit. Put True Lies out so I can upgrade.
Bill Paxton's also in that movie. Don't be a dick.
Yeah. Respect his memory. He's dead, right?
Yep. Okay. Fucking cunt. You are.
She won a Best Performance by an Actress in a Television Series, Golden Globe, in 1990 for her role on Anything But Love. And it's Richard Lewis is the guy I was trying to remember. And she won a Best Supporting Actress, BAFTA, in 1984 for her role... And Trading Places. The BAFTA is the British equivalent of an Academy Award. Now, she is one of a handful of actresses who has been nominated several times for a Golden Globe and BAFTAs, but never for an Oscar. Because usually there's sort of a correlation there. If you get nominated for a Golden Globe, you're going to get nominated for an Oscar. You may not win, but kind of a shame. I feel like she definitely deserves recognition for some of her roles. Now, Stank Dick Eddie, sitting to my left with his raging erection, has a well-known boner crush on Jamie Lee Curtis, but I can't help but feel like Halloween 2018 has a lot left to be desired on the sexy front. So do you think this movie could use a little bit of
I can smell it.
Sexing up?
We're gonna sex it up?
Sex it up! Sex it up! Oh!
It's got a wiener! Every time.
All right, porn director...
Tits! Sorry, go on.
Oh, sorry.
Ironic.
No. You're going to bust... You're going to hashtag zipper rash over there. Porn director, David Gordon Cream. presents 2018 Halloweeners. Horny slasher Michelle Myers has spent 40 years lusting after her sister Laurie, but now that they're not related anymore, she's gonna fuck her cougar ass 2018 times with her strap-on Halloweener. You're fucking welcome.
Buying the shirt.
Yeah, it's available. I have a link in the description.
Michelle Myers.
Michelle Myers. I couldn't think of anything clever. So you gender swap it. And then you got, you know, you put a strap on. It's, oh, and I forgot to mention this. The testicles are little pumpkins. And it's bright orange. Glows in the dark. She wears a William Shatner mask and fucks her not sister. You couldn't see him, but he was motioning the live long and prosper, which is called the spocker, where it's where you put two in the pink and two in the stink. It's really hard if you got small hands, especially if they got a long taint.
You long tainers out there, don't complain to us. It's not our fault.
Hashtag long taint. Oh fuck!
Get off the rails quick.
The other big component to this movie that we can't ignore talking about is John Carpenter coming back to the series. Now he's been, you know, long divorced from it, past the, you know, the third movie, and even then, like, beyond the score, and, you know, and just getting Tommy Lee Wallace the job, he hasn't really been involved. I'm still thinking about Halloweener. I'm not going to go into detail about John Carpenter's his directing resume. We'll save that for another episode, in particular when we do a Carpenter directed movie. How the fuck we've been doing podcasts for 3 years and we haven't done a John Carpenter movie is beyond me. But aside from directing, his greatest contribution to horror is as a composer, and he's composed music for the first three Halloween movies: The Fog, Escape from New York, and L.A. Christine, Big Trouble in Little China.
They live.
You goddamn right. Prince of Darkness, which I have to say is probably, other than Halloween, probably my favorite. Body Bags, In the Mouth of Madness, and Vampires. He's a Saturn Award winner for Best Music in 1999 for Vampires, and I was kind of blown away that, like, as lauded as he is as a composer, he's been nominated a lot, but he hasn't really won very many times.
I fucking love Vampires. I know we've talked about it before. That movie's fucking awesome.
The first half of Vampires is fucking terrific. It's like Ghostbusters, but with vampires, and that gives me a chub just talking about it, thinking about it.
Then you had James Woods on top of it.
I fucking love James Woods! And whichever one of those Billy Baldwin brothers, which one is it? Daniel Baldwin?
It's a bald one. Yeah. We know that.
He's the fat one. I like him.
You get a mahogany over there, Potter? I love that movie.
There's some trivia about Carpenter. He wrote Prince of Darkness under the pseudonym Martin Quatermass, because he's a huge fan of those Quatermass films from, you know, back in the day when he was a kid. When making a cameo in his films, which is pretty rare, he uses the pseudonym Rip Height. Couldn't really find out why he does that or what uses that name, but there you go. Reportedly, he will not wear a hat of whatever production he is on because of superstition. Now, once the film has wrapped and it's in post-production, he'll wear a hat or whatever as a sign of solidarity, but he's a superstitious old man, and he's held true to that for quite a few years. Reportedly, he's been offered the chance to direct a lot of movies, and for whatever reason, turned them down. He kind of has an opposition working with bigger studios because he's had bad... that's a cool effect right there. He's had bad luck with working with them. But he was offered the chance to direct Tombstone, Zombieland, Top Gun, which I found strange, The Golden Child, and Fatal Attraction. Carpenter's also a big video game fan. He cites his son, who was growing up in the 90s, as being a big reason why he got into him. I guess Sega Genesis was kind of popular during the time, and he was like, hey, yeah, Cody Carpenter, who is the daughter of those teeth are... This is actually the scene in the trailer that made me want to watch this movie. this is good. This is just good stuff. And this is actually a pretty evocative scene in H2O, but I think this scene is done
a lot better.
A lot better. But anyways, the point I was trying to make is that John Carpenter was married to Adrienne Barbeau, and their son is Cody Carpenter, who actually helped compose some of the music in this, along with Ray Davies' grandson, whose father is Ray Davies of the Kinks. Father is Dave Davies, and grandfather's Ray Davies. Or it's flipped. More of those from the Kinks. So, right now, what we're seeing on screen is a perfect example as to why David Gordon Green was a good choice of director, albeit probably not on paper. When you heard they were making this movie and they announced the people involved, where were you? What did you think?
I think we actually kind of mentioned this on the Halloween 4 podcast, but I think I remember I was scrolling through my phone and it said breaking David Gordon Green and
Danny McBride
were writing. I was like, what? And then he was involved with Tropic Thunder?
Pineapple Express.
Pineapple Express. And then, of course, Danny McBride. Anything Danny McBride does is fucking hilarious. Kenny Powers. He was funny in This Is the End. So I was a little worried, though, that they would put a lot of comedy, which we will talk about later on. They do so much one of our questions about comedy in this. But
I love this shot, by the way. James Jude Courtney donning the mask and... But, it's just so good.
But it got me excited, and I know a lot of people were worried about it, and but then they found out, how big of fans they were, and like I said, this movie to me is kind of made for us fans.
I'll retell the story. You alluded that I may have told it on the Halloween 4, but I don't remember anything I say, so I'll say it again. Fat Fuck Scott and I were in Nashville to see Uli John Roth in concert in a wine bar. I know this is a weird combination of things, but we listened to some old school 70s heavy metal and drank wine and cheese, but we were killing time in the Aubrey Mills Mall, and I'm looking through my phone, and on joblow.com, which has a subsidiary called Arrow Through the Head, it may have actually even been James Oster who... broke that news that I read. I couldn't tell you, but I didn't recognize David Gordon Green's name immediately, but I obviously knew who Danny McBride was, and I was like, fuck, this does not sound like a good idea. But then I looked up David Gordon Green, and I realized I had seen a lot of his work. Now, there's one of these movies that he directed that pretty much cemented my faith in him being a good fit for this movie, and it's a movie called Joe with Nicolas Cage. Netflix is a graveyard of bullshit most of the time, but I was bored one night, and I was looking through, and I see this movie, and I'm like, oh, fuck, this is going to be a ridiculous Nicolas Cage movie. It'll be good for a laugh. I put it on, and it's great. Nicolas Cage gives a Oscar-worthy performance, and the tension in this movie is just so exquisite. That's the only way I can put it. So, I kind of was weary that there would be a lot of comedy in this movie, but after putting the connection there that he did Joe, I'm like, okay, well, at the very least, he knows how to build tension and how to direct people to get the right kind of emotions out of it, because let's just be honest, Nicolas Cage is the widest gap actor in history. He'll give you an over-the-top, ridiculous performance, but he can also give you one that'll rock you to your core and really make you feel something. So I was on board, but not all the way. I alluded to it, and you alluded to it. He did, David Gordon Green directed Pineapple Express. He did Your Highness, which I think was really funny. He did Prince Avalanche with Paul Rudd, who was in Halloween 6, so there's another little connection. And by the way, he's in Ghostbusters 2020, there's another, you just got busted. He directed 12 episodes of East Down and Bound, 8 episodes of Vice Principals, so Danny McBride.
Vice Principals is great as well.
Yeah, I love Walton Goggins. He's a Tennessee boy.
You can hear it.
Yeah, big time. And Danny McBride, I want to say he's from North Carolina or South Carolina.
I think he's from North Carolina, but isn't he all the other guy? Isn't he also in House of a Thousand Corpses as well? Isn't he?
Walton Goggins.
Yes, he's one of the cops.
Is he?
He's going to get shot. The long slow.
You're right. Yeah. You're right. Oh, I hadn't even thought about that, but yeah, he's great. So the connection between David Gordon Green and Danny McBride goes all the way back to. They attended college together, and I want to say they were even roommates. So they kind of struck up this friendship and this working collaboration, and here we are. And now they're helming, you know, one of the biggest horror, really just one of the biggest movie franchises, you know, going.
Well, we'll probably leave this later, so I'll talk about it here in a little bit. Go right on.
Well, we got to talk about Danny McBride while we're at it. You know, KF&P, Kenny fucking Powers, one of the funniest shows ever.
If you guys have never seen Eastbound and Down, you have to see Eastbound and Down. Danny McBride plays a ex-roided out pitcher who played for the Braves. And then when he got traded, he said, "You're fucking out" to the fucking team. It's fantastic.
It's very true to life. I know it's a show about baseball, but here we are, contemporary time. It's football season, and a former player from my favorite team, the Steelers, has caused a big stink here lately by the name of Antonio Brown, and doing a bunch of shit, you know, to get out of playing for, you know, both the Steelers and then the Raiders to get a position. So, I'm just saying, like, it's a ridiculous premise, but it's a little more true to life than we probably give it credit for. This tracking shot is just phenomenal. I mean, to go back to harp on how good David Gordon Green is, this easily could have been edited, like, you know, done in separate shots, but I love the fact that it's very Brian De Palma-esque. It reminds me a lot of the shot in Carrie. I love it. I love that you hear her death, but you don't see it. Oh, and God, the fucking baby. By the way, Jamie Lee Curtis is the one who gives the baby sounds right here. That's good, right?
That's weird. I think you turned and looked at me like, "You pussy." I did.
I mean, I was like, "Oh my God, no, seriously, they can't kill a baby." It's kind of good to know that I, as jaded as I am, still have boundaries. Well, you can't kill a baby.
Well, put it in this perspective as a parent, okay? What would have been worse, him killing the baby or killing I'm assuming the mother of the baby, and just leaving the fucking baby in there with no one to come and see it?
It should be fucking fine. Oh, man. So, getting back to Danny McBride, very controversial, to say the least, for, you know, when he got hired on to do this, because, I mean, pretty much, just in a writing capacity, everything he had done had been comedy. Vice Principals, Eastbound and Down, Your Highness, The Foot Fist Way, which is dark horse movie that nobody talks about. Check it out immediately. It's I can't even describe how funny it is, but it's got a good heart to it, and Danny McBride gives a performance that you will instant classic is the best thing I could put it. And here we're about to see there she is.
I still feel like, to me, Marianne, I mean, I'm extremely grateful for what she's contributed towards podcast on this one, but when I first saw it, this was the kill that got me in theaters. I was like, "Oh, that's badass." Like, it was awesome.
I have one slide against it, and, I mean, it was sort of, I guess, unavoidable, but it's got goddamn CGI blood. And I have to say, seeing it in the theater, it didn't bother me, but every time I've watched it since, I don't know, it stuck out like a sore thumb. By the way, I just want to thank Marianne. She is such a nice lady.
Watch her dome piece right here.
Oh, this is... She had a good scream.
Oh! She just falls right back on it. Oh.
Yeah, she's terrific. I really hope that she goes to do more slasher movies. I mean, she's lives right down the road from us, so it's cool that she's in our, you know, backyard and everything. But she's very talented, super nice, and I wish her all the luck and, you know, professional success in the world. So you know, Danny. is kind of an icon of comedy, but I think that the comedy in this movie is kind of done tastefully. But I was really concerned because, I mean, you know, it's just mostly bro stoner humor and, you know, dick and fart jokes, which, I mean, there is that aspect in the movie, but for the most part, this is, it all serves
its purpose.
Yeah, it serves a purpose in, like, you know, taking small characters and giving them a little more fleshing out. The kid we'll be seeing here in just a second when it goes back to the Vicky's perspective, he steals the movie. There he is. He's fucking great, and we'll talk about him a little bit later on. But the writing, it all starts with the writing. There's like they say, there's three movies that are shot. There's the movie that's written, there's the movie that's shot, and then there's the movie that's edited. I'd be curious to read the script to see how much, you know. Did they elaborate on the comedy when they got to shooting? Did they pull it back? I don't know. But I definitely think that they had the right touch in making the movie funny without it distracting too much. Because it very easily could have gone over that line. And I'll use a movie that just came out as an example, It Chapter 2. I laughed the entire fucking movie. And I can't give the movie a negative review. But, it was not scary. And I feel like this movie balanced the comedy to where it was almost like a pressure release to prevent it from becoming just, you know, just overwhelming, you know. It built and subsided at the right times. Tell me, what do you think?
I agree. This kid kind of stole the scenes that he was in. Like, he was really, really good. And I remember everybody in the theater was laughing at this kid. And I think it was nice because it changed the pace of the movie a little bit. Where, like, it's not just kill, kill, kill.
You know, I think to me, like, comedy works really well when it's utilized properly because it gives you a moment to kind of forget about the horror. And that way, when it comes back, it's almost like it's like a slingshot. You know, it just comes back, you know, so quickly that, I don't know, it impacts you more because you've, you know, tonally shift. But in a good way. And that shot right there where the, you know, his closet door is ajar. I don't know about you, but as a kid, I couldn't sleep with the with it open. So I can identify with that. Michael has been embodied by quite a few different actors over the years. Some to benefit, some to detriment of the character. But for the most part, the role of the Shape was taken on by James Jude Courtney in this movie. And I gotta be honest, man, I think he's a contender for the best of the best. To me, it's kind of like when Daniel Craig took over for James Bond. From the first scene, you're like, fuck, yeah, this guy, he's it. I mean, what do you think overall his performance as Michael?
I liked it. I think there's only one scene to me. I feel like it's kind of we already seen it, but it's kind of like it's when he walked in. There was that long track shot where it's like the Elrod shot when he goes in there. And he just kind of like turns. That's the only thing I feel like is just like robotic. Like he's just like he turned. I'm like But other than that, that's the only thing I can say. Everything else is demeanor, like the way he moves. His size, like you and me were just talking about, everything fits. And, I mean, if you gotta kind of think about it in the perspective, he's, like, supposed to be, like, 60 years old.
Yeah, I believe he's supposed to be 61 at the time of this. Because he was 21 during the events of the first
Michael
movie.
Myers is 21.
But, yeah, he. I like that Michael is older and a little more grizzled. And
I like the shaved head and, like, the scruffy beard. Like, I dig it. And it makes sense to considering where he's been.
He got the mange. Here's a question. In Smith's Grove, I'm assuming that they have someone whose job it is to, like, scrub his balls.
Is that his question?
Yes, probably. he's beaming into my brain right now. Number one, why would you take a job like that? Two, I guess you're not going to put him in a position to be able to clean himself. I don't know. I don't want to, like, deconstruct the movie, because you could definitely poke holes into a lot of the movie. But I don't know. Little things like that kind of creep into my mind. Like, you know, who's in charge of, changing him? And I mean, does he do it on his own? I don't know. Does that kind of demystify the character if you think about those things too much?
Yes, I think it does.
You're probably right. James Jude Courtney had a long career of bit roles before this, and now he's really, really in demand. He did stuff on Knots Landing, When a Man Loves a Woman, Babylon 5, Devil in the Flesh, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which is the TV show, not the movie. And he was in that all-time classic that you and I love with a burning passion, Soccer Dog, the movie.
Whoa!
Okay, he will become the first actor to play Michael Myers 3 times, and there's a caveat with that, because technically Nick Castle will become the first actor to play Michael Myers 3 times in the next movie, but there's an asterisk on that because he only plays Michael in certain shots, one of them being a shot that will come up not too long from here. We got to talk about Nick Castle. He the originator of the character, although quite a few different people played him in the first movie, but primarily Nick was the guy. He hasn't done a lot of acting. More so, he's been behind the camera.
Was one of my favorites, yeah, Major Payne.
Yes, which when I found that out, that was a huge revelation, and we had a near ejaculation party. We were like, oh my God, Michael Myers directed Major Payne! But he also directed Mr. Wrong, which is that movie where Ellen DeGeneres still thought she was straight. Dennis the Menace with Walter Matthau and Christopher Lloyd. The Boy Who Could Fly, which was a favorite movie of mine growing up. That kid had a really, really awesome G.I. Joe collection, and I was envious of that. And he also did The Last Starfighter, which is a movie that is better remembered than it actually is. Cool thing, a little bit of trivia, Nick and John Carpenter were good friends, and the character that Tom Atkins plays in The Fog was named after him. So that's why Nick Castle is named Nick Castle. Just wish he had a fucking mustache. Still salty about that.
Piece of shit. Seriously, do we not just want to see her tits or what?
She's adorable. I kind of wish there was a little bit more of her in the movie.
Yeah.
Because I actually like her more than the lead who plays Allison, who I guess now would be a good time to kind of talk about her, because there's really not much to talk about. Andy Magic, I think is her name. I'm probably mispronouncing that. She plays the role of Allison Nelson, the granddaughter of Laurie Strode. And she's had some small roles in Orange is the New Black, Blue Bloods with Tom Selleck, Assimilate, and she will reprise the role in Halloween Kills and Halloween Ends. The role of Allison was kind of like this coveted thing for a little bit, where a lot of bigger-named actresses were trying to get in there. Lucy Hale and Emma Roberts were both kind of lobbying hard, but evidently they maybe had a knock against them being is that they were a little more recognizable. So with that, you can't really project, you know, an original character on that, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Emma Roberts is on that show, Scream Queens. So I think she probably tried to lobby her position of like, hey, I work with you on that show, give me that role.
Well, yeah, because she worked on that, and she also worked on American Horror Story as well.
Oh, okay, well, I did not know that. And now you know, and knowing is half the battle, G.I. Joe.
You're not really a big fan of the Allison character or the actress who plays her?
I don't know. I kind of feel like the whole Allison storyline is, I don't know, it kind of diverges from, to me, what I would like the movie to have been more Laurie-centric. I realize you've got to get the teenagers in there one way or another. I don't know. I will say this, her costume at the Halloween party, when she starts taking parts off of it was very obviously made to mirror what Jamie is wearing in the first movie, because there's that great shot where she's holding the knife and her boobs are popping just out enough to make the gaps in the button-up shirt do that, and Allison has that same parallel. So I was not unhappy exactly. For my money, I think she could have been a little more. I don't know. I think the character is underwritten, and
yeah, we'll probably see a lot of character development. Oh, part three mess.
There we go.
Trick or Treat Studios.
Big shout out. I actually just saw the. I went to Halloween Express, not Halloween Express, Party City today, and I saw quite a few new Trick or Treat Studios masks. They have a new version of the 74 leather face mask, which is terrific. The teeth. See, if I bought that mask, I would cut that out. Because, yeah, but otherwise, it's pretty fucking spot on. They do good stuff. I guess it's depends on what you're getting, but for the most part, they do good stuff. The biggest controversy, aside from the one we'll talk about with Dr. Sartain, is that there is no Daniel Harris inclusion into this movie. I feel personally that they could have put her in the movie and explained it away as easily as they did the fact, you know, that nobody, you know, Michael and Laurie are not related, but maybe it would have been distracting and that would have been too much fan service, but for my money, you can never have too much Daniel Harris. However, the role of the daughter is played by Judy Greer, who I absolutely fucking love, but I gotta say, I don't feel anything for her in this movie.
I feel the same way about how we did about Allison. Like, I feel like the next couple movies will have more character development.
You're probably right. Judy Greer is a really good actress, and she is really, really good on the eyes. I really, really have a thing for her. She had a reoccurring role as a prostitute on Californication with David Duchovny. She plays Trixie, and she's a hooker with a heart of gold, and she's got, you know, that really pretty red hair, and I just want to... But she's been in quite a few things. She was in Jawbreaker, What Women Want, 13 Going on 30. She was in that Wes Craven movie, Cursed, with... big forehead girl whose name I can't remember.
That's nice.
Fuck, Wednesday Addams.
Christina Ricci,
yeah.
How dare you?
It's a werewolf movie, and it's almost good, but it's not really. She had a recurring role in Californication, which I just mentioned. She was in the Carrie remake, and she's actually probably the best thing about that movie. I can't really say a lot of positive about it, because Carrie is my favorite. Carrie is my top 10 favorite movies of all time, and I just feel like, why? Right here, we're about to see it. This is it's panning over, and there's Nick Castle in the Shape costume. I mean, it's looking at it, it's very obvious it's a mirror. But in the theater, we were not cognizant of that until it shattered.
I like the continuity here, because when he goes downstairs, you see the bullet hole.
Yeah, right there.
That's cool. It's a little touch. They didn't have to add that, you know what I mean?
Well, I appreciate the attention to detail, especially on repeat viewings. I know both of you and I, you know, watch these movies till they're, you know, worn and ragged. And that's an expression that that kids won't get with their digital media. But back when these things were on VHS, you watch them so much. That's cool. A little touch, the
teeth.
Tattoo.
Did you see the teeth, too? Yeah. That was pretty cool. I didn't notice that till just now.
Judy's college remate was Colette Marino. That may be a name that most people don't recognize, but she is married to Thomas Ian Nicholas, who is in Halloween Resurrection. So there's a little connection.
That's a Rookie of the Year kid, right?
Yes, Rookie of the Year kid.
Rune Gardner.
Wasn't he also in A Kid in King Arthur's Court?
Baseball movie?
Yeah. Why? He got weirdly typecast for a couple of years.
And then he was in American Pie.
Yeah. And then he was in Halloween Resurrection, which is
his career went to shit. We don't blame you, dude. I'm sorry.
No, you're Yeah, I kind of do.
But at the same time, someone like, hey man, do you want to be in a Halloween movie? Well, fuck yeah. It just sucks that he's known for being in Halloween Resurrection.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't want you to come back either. Just stay away. One of the cool characters that I really appreciate in the movie is the character of Officer Hawkins, played by Will Patton, who was just on screen. Tying it back into the original, yes. And he's saying that, you know, I mean, like, Sartain wants Michael alive for, you know, whatever reason, and Will is like, no, fuck that, you know, if I see him, I'm gonna put a fucking bullet in his head. And I appreciate that because previous officers and sheriffs and things have been a little more reluctant, I guess, to put Michael down.
I will say I like the little touch. He was like, you realize that our friend Officer Hawkins here was there the night that Michael was apprehended. And then and she's like, what the fuck? Like, why didn't you kill him? I love him, though. He's a great actor.
Yeah, there's something about him that every time I see him, he looks like the guy who played Shelly in Friday the 13th Part 3, Larry Zerner. But
he does!
But he looks like Larry Zerner now.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that makes me like him more than I should, but there's just something like, I don't know, like engaging about him. He's done tons of stuff. He was in Desperately Seeking Susan with Madonna, which is a, you know, kind of a weird connection. It was in After Hours, No Way Out, and The Postman, and he was both the villain to Kevin Costner in both of those movies. He was also in Copycat with Sigourney Weaver, who was in Ghostbusters. She just got busted 5 times.
I'm waiting for you to name, like, my favorite movie he's in.
Armageddon.
He's in that. It's not
Entrapment.
Nope.
The remake of Gone in 60 Seconds.
No.
Remember the Titans?
That's the one.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
He is great in that movie, too. That's a good movie.
Denzel. It is a good movie. He's in 45 episodes of The Agency. He was in The Punisher, the 2004 version with Thomas Jane, which is not a good Punisher movie, but it's a good movie. He was, more recently, he was in 52 episodes of Falling Skies.
I never noticed that. Did you ever notice that?
Oh, yeah, that they were right behind them.
Yeah, I never noticed that.
It's nice to have little... I mean, he's pretty shit at his job. When all you have to do is look your head slightly to the right and to see. But beside the point, most recently, Will Patton was in 10 episodes of the Swamp Thing show that was canceled after the first episode, starring our good friend Derek Mears, who was Jason and in the Friday 13th remake. That's his dream role, and fuck him. I'm not a big DC guy, but I love Swamp Thing, and I really wish that had worked out.
Did they ever air the first episode?
I think they aired all of them, but like they canceled. They said they're not going to make a second season. It's like on that. It's like a DC streaming app that, you know, nobody fucking has. Because everybody has to have a fucking streaming app now. So let's talk about our mustache friend sitting next to a Will Patton. Because even now, we're going to have to hold off, probably reserve our judgment for this question. Because I got a lot to say about this guy. I'm gonna butcher his name, by the way. Hollick Billinger as Dr. Sartain. He's the most controversial character in the film by a, you know, fucking mile. But he's had a really successful career, but mostly in Great Britain. But he's done a few films over here that people would recognize. He was in Buffalo Soldiers with Joaquin Phoenix. He was in Ishtar, which is one of the biggest cinematic flops of all time. You know, much hated film. It's not as bad as everybody says it is. But what he's probably best known for is in 107 episodes of EastEnders, which is a really, really popular BBC show. He won Best Comedy TV Series Actor at the 37th Golden Butterfly Awards, whatever the fuck that is. No clue, but congratulations, buddy.
Do as I say. Go on.
I'm a little more inclined to speak favorably as him as an actor in this movie because I think he serves the purpose that he was definitely intended to. And I don't know. There's just something really, really slimy about him. Like his first scene, like I don't know. I got kind of uneasy feeling about him. So the little foreshadowing, perhaps. I don't know if you picked up on that or not. Yeah. I don't know. His mustache is glorious, but it doesn't make me want to hang out and have a beer with him like it does on Tom Atkins. Still salty about Tom Atkins not having a mustache in the fog. This is my favorite scene of the movie, bar none. I think this is the closest the movie comes to achieving the suspense of the original. And this dorky kid, who his character's name is Oscar. We'll talk about him in a few minutes in a little more length. But I feel like, especially post-Scream, the casting for horror movies, studio horror movies, has all been catalog models and stuff. And I really appreciate that this kid is fugly as fuck. He's got a Daniel Harris forehead, but he doesn't wear it well like she does, or Christina Ricci, and he kind of looks like a fucking Garbage Pail Kid. I know I'm ragging on this poor guy.
He looks realistic.
I mean, not really, but I like that he's ugly is what I'm trying to say. I appreciate a movie who dares to cast someone who is not conventionally attractive, because pretty much across the board, everybody else is at least, marginally to objectively attractive in terms of, you know, what the general consensus would have them be.
I like that they tie in Mr. Elrod, too.
Yeah, it's a nice little nod. It's such a cool idea of having the motion detected floodlights, and that's a great scare right there. His untimely death, ending up on this fence post, is just you've seen the movie they did after Shaun of the Dead.
Hot Fuzz.
Yeah. Timothy Dalton ends up in this same predicament, but he survives. Remember in the movie they have the tiny village set, yeah, and he falls on it, and he's got the fucking like tower sticking through his mouth. He's like, it really hurts. This guy, on the other hand, does not.
Look at that.
That's so good. I like
this interaction right here too, where she turns and then boom.
Yeah, I think her acting is pretty good right here. And this is the music I was talking about earlier. This is the standout of the new parts of the score. Oh man, in the theater, it's like just that bass was just hitting, make your butthole hairs tingle.
Well, we talked about off before we started recording, but like in the deleted scenes, there's a lot of stuff, but there's also special feature about the music in it, and I highly recommend you guys check it out.
Yeah, anything. I mean, the hallmark of the series, aside from just seeing the iconic mask and stuff, is the music. And when it hits, it really hits, and then you have H2O, and then maybe it's not quite up to. I don't really like the Rob Zombie Halloween music either. Let's talk about Allison's father. We'll knock these last couple of characters out pretty quickly, and then we'll get to our some trivia and fan questions, since we're getting pretty close to the finale of the film. Toby Huss plays Ray Nelson. He's best known as Artie, the strongest man in the world.
That's the first thing you said at the theaters when he came on screen.
I was so happy to see him. He's a super talented guy. He's been in a lot of stuff. He's in Basketball Diaries with Leonardo DiCaprio, Jerry Maguire, Beavis and Butthead Do America, 24 episodes of Carnival, which was a great show, 17 episodes of Reno 911. He was in Milo, which I highly recommend. But he's best known for his many characters on King of the Hill, including Khan and Cotton Hill. He did 164 episodes.
I never put that in correlation with one other.
There you go. Okay, we kind of glossed over a little bit earlier, but our podcasters, they're kind of the, they got us into this whole mess. Jefferson Hall plays the role of Aaron Corey. He's the male podcaster. He was in Guy Ritchie's Sherlock Holmes. He was Hugh of the Vale in Game of Thrones, so that's probably what he's best known for. 26 episodes of Wizards versus Aliens. I don't have a fucking clue what that is, but I'm sure there's somebody drinking Mountain Dew watching that right now. 20 episodes of Vikings, which is a really good show. And he was also in Force Awakens more recently, so he was a knocking First Order officer.
I think if they were to do any kind of deal with like remaking the original Ghostbusters, if he was
Walter Peck, yes, he's
absolutely.
He looks like a young William Atherton. I picked up on that as well. I like you, friend. I like you. All right, I'm gonna butcher the girl's name who plays the female podcaster. Ryan Reese plays Dana Haynes.
That's a porno name.
You said it, not me.
It's a porn name.
She's pretty easy on the eyes. I wouldn't mind.
One of those deleted scenes you see her in the shower, you almost see her tits.
Almost, but not quite. Motherfuck, why couldn't... We always get skimped out on the fucking tits, man.
Yeah, it's because we always...
The goddamn thing is named after you, and every movie we watch together is like, you know, no tits. Sans boobs.
We got like retro tits in this one.
Okay, well... I'll take what we got. Especially last year, we were tempted with Kathleen Kinmont's massive mammaries.
That we don't see. We see her back. Fuck. That's nice.
All right. I'm going to have to comment on this right here.
Whee!
So, this is the big twist of the movie. We'll reserve judgment until we get to the questions. But I have to say, as this happened, I died laughing. I kind of reached over, got Eddie's attention, and I'm like, oh my god, I hope I fucking hope that is, I'm blanking on his fucking name, gets run over in Halloween 2.
Ben Tramer?
Ben Tramer. Yeah. I was like, oh my god, I hope that's Ben Tramer.
And I started laughing. My wife's like, what?
Because at first I thought this was going to be the part where someone is accidentally killed, because like, oh fuck, that's Michael, run him over, and I thought it would have been like a really funny nod to have it, you know, 40 years later, Ben Tramer get run over again, but obviously that's not what happens here. We'll talk about this in a minute. Ryan Reese, whatever her name is. She hasn't been in a lot. She was in The Lears, which was a movie that had Bruce Dern, Sean Astin, and Anthony Michael Hall in it, who is going to play Tommy Doyle in Halloween Kills.
We're going to talk about that here in a little bit.
Yeah. All right, let's knock through our additional cast, and then we'll get to some trivia. Virginia Gardner, a.k.a. Vicky, she's the babysitter. She's best known as Carolina Dean in the Runaways series. The first season is fucking terrific. And if you actually, Eddie, if you look right ahead of us on this shelf right here, I have every fucking graphic novel of the Runaways. It's fucking terrific. The adaptation is both better and worse than the comic. But she's great in it. She lip locks with some pretty attractive ladies in the show. Nice. You know, call me sexist, but we need more of that in cinema. Miles Robbins plays the role of Dave, who's Vicky's boyfriend. He got the tattoo and fucking knife to the wall.
I watched Blockers. He was in Blockers.
Yes, he was in the formerly known Cock Blockers with John Cena. He has a recurring role on the revival of The X-Files, but he made his film debut in a little movie called Dead Man Walking with his mother, Susan Sarandon.
Really?
Yes, and if you notice, his last name is Robbins. Tim Robbins is his father. Shit. Isn't that a cool little...
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that until I was doing my research. But if you look at him, I can really see
Tim Robbins.
Tim Robbins, yep. Big time. Yeah,
it's like Susan Sarandon's daughter looks just like her.
Oh my god. She's in Californication as well. She plays a stripper, and them boobies is so good.
Why can we not watch that?
We'll pop it in next. All right, and I'm going to butcher... Julian, the kid who plays Julian, his name, but it's Jabrail Nant Tambu. He hasn't done much, but he's going to be back for Halloween Kills. I'm totally on board for that. I'm all for you killing kids. Don't fucking kill this kid. He needs to hang around.
He's the Reggie. this series.
He's the Reggie the Reckless of this this scene. Let's talk real quick about these two guys right here. The older gentleman is he was like the coordinator with them on police matters. Like he kind of gave them
like tips
about like this is police procedural and stuff. And the other gentleman,
the brown in the fucking pudding.
Yes. And the other gentleman right there holding the flashlight, he's actually the special effects artist of the film. Really? He's an Academy Award winner. He won an Academy Award for Suicide Squad, which is a terrible movie, but the effects are really good. Dylan Arnold plays the role of Cameron Elam. I didn't realize this until I rewatched it again, but yes, he's the son of Lonnie, as in, get your ass away from there, Lonnie.
They mentioned Lonnie other than that, too, and she said Lonnie Lamb is not going to get out of the, is it the fourth grade, fifth, whatever. Yeah. Because she said the whole interaction with Tommy Doyle in the first one. Which, yeah, he said he was doing peyote with him, and they were, like, tripping balls together.
Yeah. used to buy peyote from him. But yeah, it's nice that there's a little attention to detail. You know, some of the secondary characters, you know, have kind of a lineage going on to these new movies. Drew Schneid, the ugly kid I mentioned earlier, plays the role of Oscar. He's the third wheel of the movie. He was in three episodes of Stranger Things, and he was in Goosebumps too. And that's pretty much
Stranger Things. Like kind of background.
season two. I could point him out, but I couldn't explain to you very quickly who he actually is. We're nearing our apex of this movie. Let's got some general trivia. Halloween 2018 is the highest grossing film of the franchise. However, if you adjust for inflation, most likely the original would still be the highest grossing. But like we stated earlier, we really don't know how much money it's made, and I mean, it's been subsequently re-released just about every year for the past 40 years, you know.
I watched
so,
it in theaters years back.
Yeah, it's still going strong. It always makes a killing, just like Ghostbusters. You know, they're released pretty much every year, and people go in droves to see them. PJ Souls, who played Linda in the original, she has a cameo as a teacher. Blanking, you miss her. Oh, I hear. Best kill.
I was like, where the fuck did his head go?
While the film ignores all the sequels, it does pay homage to several of them. There's, you know, the references to, you know, Mr. Elrod and the Halloween 3 mask.
There's that scene, too, where when you first see Michael on the street, the kids have the boombox like Dick Warlock's son.
And yes, in Halloween 2, yeah. You did your homework. I'm proud of you.
Yeah, I just like these movies.
The production lasted 28 days and was filmed in Charleston, South Carolina. Now, normally they're filmed in California, and they'd have to, you know, bring in, you know, leaves and stuff, and palm trees in the background. And
they're actually filming a good time, because they're actually filming in North Carolina. I think they said filming started yesterday or today.
I thought they were filming in... Wilmington?
In Wilmington, North Carolina. Yeah.
Okay, there you go. Wilmington, the character of Michael Myers is 61 years old during the events of the film. We kind of covered that a little earlier. Halloween 2018 is the first in the series not to be shot on film. This was entirely shot digitally. I didn't pick up on this in the theater, but after rewatching it multiple times, I can tell. Frame rate is unnaturally smooth in places, and this is one of the few knocks I have against the movie. The whole, it's just a trend in movies now that everything is lit blue and orange. I'm a little more forgiving in this movie because orange is sort of, you have to have orange in a Halloween movie. But I don't know. I think this movie is going to look dated probably in about a decade. Thankfully, it's got a good, you know, story to kind of hold it up aside from that. The working title used on set to kind of throw people off from, you know, crashing the filming location was Uncle Orange. And this film in the series, God, I'm tripping over my words. This is the third film in the series simply to be called Halloween. That's why we keep referring to it as Halloween 2018. So let's get to our trivia questions. I know we've been chomping at the bit to get this one out of the way. All right, this comes from Jimmy O, James Oster from Arrow in the Head, who gave us that wonderful introduction for the film. How do you feel about the Dr. Sartain twist, and how the hell does a frail old dude lift Michael into the car?
Well, not only that, he was shot. Not only was he frail and older, but he was shot.
Yeah, I mean, he's in, right in the shoulder, too, and make it really hard for him to be able to man a lantern. Sexy. Take it. I mean, you're the bigger Halloween fan.
I mean, looking at it now, it's super obvious the twist is coming, but when we were watching, I didn't see it coming.
I will say this. The first time, I thought the twist was great. But in subsequent viewings, it's stupid, and it literally serves the only purpose of getting Michael from one position to another. That's bad screenwriting, but I can't fault them because they set themselves up to a position where they had to have something like this to get him from point A to point B.
Like, if you think about it, what other way would he have gotten there? Was he gonna like Halloween for it, like get under the fucking truck, you know? He's 61, man. Hasn't had his activity or anything.
What's that Tom Brady joke? You know, where it's like, he's 41 years old. Oh, yeah. He threw a 2-yard pass. He's 41 years old.
He's great. He's great. He's the GOAT. 41. Tom Brady threw a 5-yard pass downfield. He's the GOAT.
I mean, we could rag on this forever. I don't think it was essential to the plot, but I understand why they did it. The whole thing with him putting on the mask, I really thought in that moment, like, oh my God, they're gonna, like, Michael is dead and they're gonna take this into a different direction. But obviously that didn't hold up.
I think they could have twisted it as to explain him carrying Michael, because that's a big dude for him to carry. If he would have been like Dr. Sartain, had the mask on, had his little knife, and made Allison get out and help put Michael in the car.
That
makes more sense.
That makes a lot more sense, but then it's like, well, then why don't you just fucking run away? Because, like, you know, an old man,
yeah,
you're going to chase her down.
There's real no logical reason to explain it. This kind of threw me off for a loop. I was not expecting this.
Oh, and blew his fucking fingers
this
off.
One is going to be hard to explain in the later... the later movies, like he's gonna bleed out or something. What was the dude that played for the Giants that blew his hand off a firecracker? I can't remember his name. You know what I'm talking about, though.
Yeah. Oh man, we're turning off the audience left and right while the sports talk.
Fuck it, I don't care.
All right,
it's football season, baby.
This comes from Ben Hopkins. Do you think this movie suffers without the Dr. Loomis character? He's the other major component, especially in the sequels.
What can you really do? I mean, you got to put in perspective how old the actual character would have been.
Well, yeah, he's been quite dead for quite a while. And I definitely would not have wanted them to recast him.
Unless they would have done something where it was Loomis's like son or something along the lines of that. Because could have happened from...
I mean, Sartain is kind of like that. He's like the evil Loomis. He was a student of his, and so I don't know. He kind of serves the purpose of Loomis, but it's subverted. We get swerved.
Oh God, they're really not listening to this one.
All right. Who the fuck taught Michael Myers how to drive? That comes from Ashley Stapleton.
It's easy. It's Dr. Wynn. Hello.
Okay. Well, that continuity doesn't exist anymore. So.
Dr. Wynn.
Now, correct me, in the TV version of Halloween, is there not a throwaway line? Or maybe it might just be in the regular version where Dr. Loomis says something like, someone must have taught him, or...
Someone must have given him lessons.
Yeah.
And then over the intercom in the background, here, Dr. Wynn, like, being called, mm-hmm. and then he walks back. So...
Yeah. So,
Go. Let's be real. I mean... Is it really that hard to drive?
Well, see, here, that goes back to my discussion about, like, I mean, if he's this uncontrollable, and, you know, and someone has to wash his balls for him, in theory, like, somebody's going to teach him how to drive? I don't know!
They're not going
to
get that.
Nobody will get that reference.
We will.
Dr. Wynn, sure, he taught him how to drive. This comes from Allison Hunt. We touched a little bit on this. How do you feel about the comedy in the movie?
We talked about it. It's kind of well-paced with the comedy. When you really think about it, it's just the little kid, really. I mean, with a lot of the comedy. And then Oscar. But he's kind of like the dumb character. He's supposed to be the dumb character anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, the dad, you know, the whole, you know, I got peanut butter on my penis line, which I died laughing. That was really funny. And I think if you had taken the comedy, like, say, away from his character, man, he would have been not boring. Memorable, like, at all. There's little things like that, like when they're having the dinner and he's kind of chatting up Allison's boyfriend, who turns out to be a douchewad, but... little things like that. I think the levity, you know, kind of rounds the characters out. Yeah. All right. This comes from Mitchell Taylor. Where do you rank James Jude Courtney among the actors who have played Michael Myers? Take it, Eddie, because I'm going to have a very controversial answer with this.
He's very excellent. I mean, Nick Castle, it's hard to touch the original because I feel like he just moves so gracefully. Like, just it works for what it was, and the way it was shot is a big part of that too. The way Carpenter shot it all made him look really, it could have just been Carpenter's work, truthfully. I know you're a big fan of Dick Warlock as well. To me, Dick Warlock's actually one of my least favorites.
Well, fuck you.
I love Dick Warlock, though. Don't get me wrong. He's awesome in fucking Casino.
True.
But, like, I mean, I'd rank him up there. I mean, I'd say top three. Because to me, I mean, George P. George
P. Wilbur would be
four yeah. And six. I actually like his Michael in part six. I like the way he moves in part six.
He looks a lot better in six than he does in four.
Yeah. So I like him in part six, which I know a lot of people shit on that movie. But and then Nick Castle.
It'll come to the podcast eventually. Just, you know, wait a while. We'll get to it.
Producer's cut.
Oh, yeah. Is there even a discussion? No.
That's the only version we watch in my household. No, Kalen, we're not watching this terrible movie. You put this better terrible movie.
I've always said that Dick Warlock is my favorite Michael. There's just something about, you kind of criticized that scene with James Jude Courtney of being sort of robotic. I don't know. That's kind of what I like about Dick Warlock. His movements are, I don't know, are almost, it's like he's not in control of himself. You know what I mean? He's just pure instinct. And he has a little more, James Jude Courtney has a little more loose take than Dick Warlock, but I'm gonna call it. I think by the time this trilogy is done, I think James Hugh Courtney is going to be arguably the best Michael Myers.
I can agree with that. The big thing that we talked about in this is about how the consistency of how Halloween is, where you'll get a good movie, or at least a decent movie, and then you'll get a completely shit movie. And that's my biggest fear. I have faith in the writing and in the people behind it, but just the...
Well, the climate is a lot different now than it has been in the past. You know, Mustafa Akkad, who was the producer of these films for years, he got killed in the Egyptian bombings, and his son took over, and Malik, and I think he's been a little more, what's the word I'm looking for? A little more accepting of trying different things. This is why we got the Halloween remake and its sequel, which I mean are, you know, debatable the quality of those, but I really don't think this movie would have happened in the way it did if Mustafa were still around. No. I mean, take that for what you will. It's not an indictment of the man. I think he was just kind of, you know, had a vision, and that was that.
But with that said, too, I think it'll be nice because you know this. The consistency of the mask always changes from movie to movie. I think it's going to be consistent.
That's going to be nice. And we haven't really talked about the mask. I'll add this as a bonus question from me to you. Where do you rank this in, you know, the pantheon of the mask of the series?
I like it. I like it a lot more than what the Rob Zombie mask did. I think it looks better. This is also a little sidebar with this. All the guys got me this for my birthday, got me this mask.
You're welcome, bitch.
And the first thing we noticed was how small it was.
Yeah.
The size was a lot smaller. But I like it. I think it has a really cool look to it.
It fits your head perfectly.
It does. It is. Yeah, I'm wearing it this year for Halloween.
Yeah, when the first images leaked to the mask, that was like a cementing moment. It's like, okay, I'm on board for this, because I did not like... I liked the Rob Zombie Halloween mask before it's all ripped to shreds, and I hate it in part two.
I like this.
Yeah, mirroring what happens in the original, just the opposite. But yeah, the mask in Halloween 4, albeit the same mask, it's just it's overpainted, and I don't know, it doesn't look great. Halloween 5,
but to me, the Halloween 4 mask makes sense, at least, because he recently finds it. It's not supposed to be the same mask in continuity.
It still looks like shit.
I will say, out of all the masks I've seen per mass produced with even Trick or Treat Studios, the Halloween 6 mask has the best hair. I know you always say it looks like Bill Murray.
It looks just like Bill Murray from Scrooge.
But the hair they use on the mask, it looks awesome. It looks awesome.
It is probably the best consistency I've seen of the mask. But you know, I'm kind of. Some people hate the 6 mask. Some people really like it. I'm kind of in the middle on it.
I think you had the shit show of 4 and 5, I think 6 looks a lot better than those two.
But I like the mask in 6 better than H2O or Resurrection.
Which one in H2O?
Any of them. which one of them is...
Digital.
But one of them, isn't it just a reworked version of the Part 6 mask?
I think so. Yeah, because then Beekler have a...
John Beekler.
R.I.P.
Rest in peace, my friend. Yeah. Okay, this next question comes from Fat Tony. What are your feelings of the erasing of all the other sequels? We kind of glossed over this throughout the course of this commentary, but it was the most controversial thing, but I think people got over it pretty quickly once they saw the movie. But how do you feel about it?
I think once people saw, like we said, even they just saw the mask, they were fine with it. Well, clearly this is one of the most profitable movies, so clearly I guess it really doesn't fucking matter which ones you erase from existence. When you take away Halloween Resurrection, it's always a positive.
The Halloween series has a distinction that none of the other horror series, like slasher series, have, in that it really does have this kind of choose your own adventure quality to it, and it allows you to view the series through different lenses.
Yeah.
I mean, you have your trilogy of, or I guess it'd be quadrilogy of films with Laurie and Michael, where they're brother and sister. The fourth one being Resurrection. It's terrible, but you have that journey you can take. You have the Thorn Cult trilogy. You have the Michael Myers duology. And then now you have this new series of Halloween 2018 ends and kills.
I can understand how it can like this scene. That mask is badass too. I can understand if you're a younger person, how fucking mind blowing and difficult it would be to try to follow this.
It's like doing Chinese arithmetic. You know,
Common Core man.
Yes, I'm glad I grew up in the time I did, because I'm bad at math. Period, and I couldn't do it the way the kids do it. But you know, I was one of the few people probably not outraged by this.
I wouldn't either.
Because after Resurrection and Halloween 2, I was like, you know what, just fine. It can't get any worse. So I'm fine with it, and now I'm completely fine with it. Now, I made it a point earlier to talk about how I wish that Daniel Harris was involved, but I mean, we did get to see her in Rob Zombie's Halloween, and there was tits in that movie. So
thank you, Rob.
Thank you, Rob. We do.
If anything came
that.
From those two movies, that's it.
Yeah. We'll pop that in later. Have some alone time. All right. This question comes from Fat Tony. Since Halloween 3, has the trailer of the original film. Do you think that it could be based on a true story that sets part three in the 2018 movie in the same universe? I think what he's saying is, like, there was a movie made about the events of Halloween, and Tom Atkins is watching it in
the universe of that.
Yeah, and he continues on to say, Tom Atkins needs to bone Jamie Lee Curtis in both sequels, and the daughter and the granddaughter, but not at the same time. Tom Atkins has class. Hashtag Atkins Facts. Your thoughts? Yeah,
absolutely.
Let's get on fucking board for that. You know, here's the thing. Tom Atkins has expressed interest in doing some kind of role. Obviously not Dan Challis, but, you know.
He should still be called Dan Challis.
Oh, I'd be totally on board for him to actually be the fucking character. I know most people would not, so go ahead and, you know, crucify me for that. But no movie suffers from having Tom Atkins in it. It's true. It will only make it better. I know he just signed on for the Collector sequel and... you know,
yeah, that was just recently. Yeah, that was a few days ago.
So, I mean, he's going to be in a creep show for Shudder. He's going to be in season two of that. I mean, there's still gas in that tank, man. Let's get some more Tom Atkins.
Bone some young chicks. 18 and over, man. Though. Actually, young chicks.
I think it's safe to say that Allison's a virgin and she should lose her virginity to Tom Atkins.
Agreed.
Not I mean like the actress, not in the movie. Learn sex from a real man. Take a mustache ride to heaven.
He just grabs a six pack. Like, we're doing this. Like, okay.
It's a six pack of Jack Daniels. She's gonna be so passed out that, like, nothing he does is gonna be legally considered sex. It's just dark.
Fuck Tom Atkins. Jesus Christ.
All right. This one more question from Fat Tony. How bangable do you find Jamie Lee Curtis in her advanced age? The surly drunk thing from the movie did it for me, personally.
She's my silver fox. Like, if I was to ever cheat on my wife respectfully, it would be with Jamie Lee Curtis.
But if we
ever hooked up, we have to listen to the entire This Is Spinal Tap album while it happens.
Oh, that's sexy. I'm on board now. Can I hang a sock on your door and stand patiently outside to get the details?
What's the sex farm? Sex school, isn't it?
No, sex farm woman. I'll be your hide hand, sex farm woman.
That's the song it has to play. And as I climax, Stonehenge hits right into it.
Where the demons dwell. No, that's when you're getting the erection, because that's the erecting of Stonehenge. Diddle-doo, diddle-doo, Stonehenge. Big bottom. That's round two, and you're checking out other holes.
So absolutely. Answer to the question is yes. Out of shadow of a doubt.
I would want her to get a haircut, but I'm down. Both upstairs and down. How many times, this comes from Titty Flippin' Travis, how many times a day do you think Michael jerked off in that asylum?
It's a lot of years by yourself, man. And you can only see with one eye, so might as well ruin that sight.
How often do you think he bukkakied himself because of his wonky eye?
Wonky eye. Oh, fuck! Again? Mr. Sarté!
He doesn't say anything. Does he grunt? Does Michael Myers silently masturbate?
Kids, send your hate mail.
What do you think? The world needs to know. Oh, man.
Now, I have a question for you, because I know that was the last question as the credits roll.
Ask me a question.
I believe it's Brian Andrews. Is the original Tommy Doyle. Let's be quite honest, he's kind of butthurt that they didn't come to him, because they came to the same girl who apparently was on, like, that Housewives fucking garbage show. I don't know,
but she's still really fucking hot.
She looks like a super bitch, but that's just me.
I don't care.
But she, you know, they signed her on, but, I mean, you've seen her.
Yeah.
But then you see Brian Andrews, and...
Yeah. He doesn't look like Paul Rudd.
He's not screen ready. But how do you feel about them not using Brian Andrews, but they are using Anthony Michael Hall, who I love in Weird Science?
I love Anthony Michael Hall just in general. You know, for the sake of consistency, it would be cool to have everybody back, but let's just be honest, 40 years of not acting, you know what I mean?
It's a liability, I look at it.
I mean, we don't know the extent of how big the role is going to be. Like, if it was just a passing thing, then yeah, put him in there. It's not going to hurt anything, but I'm assuming if they're going to hire Anthony Michael Hall, it's going to be a bigger role, so I don't know. I feel bad for the guy. I mean, everybody else is getting paychecks to come back and kind of get another 15 minutes of fame, but he's not. But, you know, Lindsay Wallace is. She's hot, though. And with that, I think we're going to close up shop for another month. Appreciate you stopping by the Black Lodge, Stank Dig Eddie. And I want all of you to follow us on social media. Well, we got us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram now for all those shit you can get anywhere else, but evidently kids like the Instagram. Follow us at Rants Black Lodge. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on one of our many platforms we're available on: iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, Podbean, Player FM, iHeartRadio, and don't forget to stop by our homepage at juicykruger.com.
And don't forget to buy some merch.
Yeah, buy some fucking t-shirts.
Halloweener 4, the reach around of Michael Myers, is a fucking winner.
Yeah, we got Jason XXX, a lot of good stuff. You like their porn parodies.
No Holes Barred.
Yeah. Oh, the fucking Hogan face on that is fucking, it's good stuff. All right, Rant Army, till next month, keep on marching.
Bye.
Bye.